Speaking, we're out of executive session. We met to talk about a contractual matter and also the potential purchase of a piece of property. We did not vote on the issue. That's the end.
Move to adjourn?
Second.
Move to adjourn. We are adjourned. Is that okay, Richard? Is that okay, Gary?
Yes, sir.
Do I have to do it over?
Textbook.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Aiken City Council meeting on May 12, 2008. We appreciate everybody being with us this evening. And if you would, desire to stand with us while we have a prayer and a pledge of allegiance. You may do so, please.
Lord God, we just thank you for the beautiful day that you've given us here. For the great city and the great nation. Lord, you've entrusted us with so many things, and we just ask that you'd give us the wisdom and discernment that we need and clarity of mind to serve you and to serve those within our community. Give us ears to hear, Lord, and allow us to be slow to speak as individuals come before the city tonight with their concerns, thoughts, and ideas. We ask your continued blessing upon this city, its employees, and all the residents and citizens that live here in our community. We thank you and give you the honor and glory this evening. We ask in your name, amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, any additions or deletions we need to make to the agenda this evening? I think one thing, we do have some nominations for appointments to our committees, so we can certainly add that. Is there anything else? Okay, if not, do we have a motion and a second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. One thing before we move to minutes, I would like to recognize, because these young people are going to leave, maybe around 8 or so, or maybe earlier. We have a Boy Scout troop with us from Presbyterian Church, St. John, 121, and we are glad that they're with us. We're glad you young fellows and some of the adults too are with us tonight, and it's my understanding they're working on their citizenship badge. And what we usually do, and if we'd like to do it again this evening, is to ask you all to stand as a group and tell us who you are. Okay? All right, would you do that? And we can start in the front row and just go on down the row and wind around. We want to speak up real loudly so we all can hear you, please.
I'm Evan Cook, and I'm the second class scout.
Second.
I'm Ricky Bailey, and I'm the second class scout. I'm Gary Brown, and I'm the scout.
Martin Marius, Assistant Scoutmaster.
Well, we thank you again for being with us. And if there's any way during the course of your scouting that we can help you, please let us know, would you? I think all the council members would be more than willing to answer any questions you may have about citizenship or council meetings or whatever it may be. And we thank you very much for being with us. You recognize that you're doing a wonderful thing being in the scouting program. It's a wonderful, wonderful program to be in. And you are going to be the leaders of the future. Everybody understand that? Right? Okay, we'll work on it hard and do your best. And I'm sure some of you will attain the Eagle Scout ranking in a few years. So thank you very much again for being with us. And you may sit down, and you may also leave whenever you see a need to leave. And thanks for being with us. Okay, the minutes, last meeting, consideration of the minutes of the regular meeting of April 28, 2008, and the budget work session of April 29, 2008. Any comments, changes necessary? If not, do we have a motion? A second?
Mr. Mayor, I move that the minutes be adopted as written.
Second.
Okay. All in favor, show of hands, please. Okay, passes unanimously. Under old business, we have first reading. First item is a second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to annex the Aiken Unitarian Universalist Church property at 115 Gregg Avenue. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. I'm going to read the ordinance by title. It's an ordinance to annex the corporate limits of the city of Aiken, certain property consisting of 1.09 acres of land, more or less owned by the Aiken Unitarian Universalist Church, such as zoned the same residential single family, RS 15. When they originally went to the Planning Commission, they were looking for a zoning of limited professional, but because the area was primarily residential around the church, the Planning Commission recommended that the more proper zoning would be RS 15. And since the church was already occupying the site, they did not need to seek a BZA exception to occupy a church in a residential zone. Based on that, the Planning Commission unanimously approved this request for annexation, and this is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to annex property at 115 Gregg Avenue under the R15 zone.
Okay. Thank you, sir. This is a second reading and public hearing of this ordinance, and if anyone in the audience would like to speak on this ordinance, you may do so. During the course of the meeting, if we have other things that folks want to speak on, we'll just ask you to come up to the microphone and give your name and address. But on this particular one, if anyone wants to speak, if not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, it is indeed a pleasure for me to move on second reading and public hearing to annex this property. And if any of you have an occasion to go and visit, you're welcome. They're very warm. And I think they would invite you enough so that you would want to come back again. So I move that we approve this on second reading and that it become effective immediately.
Okay.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, we have a motion and second. Any other discussion? Show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimous. Item 2 is a second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to set cable franchise fees. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. Again, I'll read this by title only. It's an ordinance setting the cable service operation franchise fee rate for providers operating within the Aiken City limits. This is with the Atlantic Broadband Services, and they have been serving the city in a great manner in the last few years. Originally, in June 29th, 1993, we gave a franchise agreement to Robin Cable System, and there has been seven iterations thereafter, four in total, with Atlantic Broadband being the last one. The difference we now have is last May 23rd, 2006, the governor signed into law the Competitive Cable Service Act. This Cable Service Act substantially changed the way that traditionally cable operators were approved and how they were functioning within the communities. Atlantic Broadband Cable Service agreement expires in June, and they will automatically fall under these new provisions. What we're doing tonight is just reaffirming the franchise fee, which is currently in existence at 5%, and we're just reaffirming that. Because under the new act, we could set a fee of whatever we want to, up to a maximum of 5%. The state law also requires the cable service to provide access channels for the public, which they're already doing with Channel 4. And it provides a method for complaints from customers that are now handled under the Department of Consumer Affairs with the state. So if there's a complaint, they would not be complaining to the city. They would be complaining to the state for this. I'm sure, though, if the first course of action would always be with Atlantic Broadband, Sam McGill, who is here tonight, if there is a problem, he is always open to hearing about that problem to try to resolve those problems. So, but if that can't be resolved, certainly we could get involved with the consumer affairs at the state level is the proper way to go ahead and handle the complaints in the future. So for your consideration tonight, this is the second reading in a public hearing of an ordinance to set the cable service operation franchise fee at 5%.
Okay. Thank you, sir. This is the second reading public hearing of this ordinance, and if anyone would like to speak about this ordinance, make any comments, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration. Do we have a motion and a second?
Mr. Mayor, I move that we adopt this on second reading and public hearing to set the cable service operations franchise fee at 5%. Re-ratifying, is that what we're doing?
Yes.
This fee.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion?
I have a question regarding that. This is a 20-year.
It's with the state of South Carolina that the all the provisions are followed.
But
we're not providing
our setting the cable franchise that
it stays at 5% until City Council decides they want something differently.
Okay.
Okay. Any other discussion?
It's not like SC&G or Aiken Electric Co-op where we have a franchise agreement with them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it comes up for reconsideration.
It would not come up unless Council brings it back up again. The next ordinance that you'll be having will be actually providing a franchise agreement with them saying that they can operate within the city of Aiken, but under the provisions of the state of South Carolina.
Roger, that is, it is or it isn't different than what we've had in the past.
It is no different whatsoever.
The length of time?
Well, there is no length of time.
No, I know, but it was always like that?
Always like...
There was no date in which we reissued it.
Well, yes, and the date comes up in June of this year. Their franchise agreement with the City of Aiken expires in June of this year.
And that was my question. When does this come up again?
It does not come up again. Once it expires, they are under the provisions of the state of South Carolina.
So with the state law, it changed. The policy changed.
That is correct.
Yeah. Okay. It used to be that way. That it would come up there. So.
Is this gross revenue from all sources of revenue from Atlantic Cable, including the phone and internet and television?
Anita? I think it includes everything but
the internet. Sam, would you like to address that question?
By federal law, the internet cannot have a franchise fee on it, but I believe everything else that they provide does have a 5%.
Okay.
Make sure we all understand.
Correct. The franchise fee is assessed on the video portion of a customer's bill. It's also assessed on the sales tax, and a franchise fee is assessed on the franchise fee itself. So you're collecting a fee on fee as well.
But not on the telephone and not on the internet. Okay.
The telephone is at a 1% rate. Again, that was set statewide about 3 years ago.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And the under the statewide franchise, it comes up. Currently, the state has a maximum of 5%, but there are provisions in the statewide franchise that would allow you to revisit a franchise fee, and there are procedures to do that over time. It, currently, the state law, the maximum is 5%.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 3 is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to renew the cable franchise with the Atlantic Broadband. Mr. Leduc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance approving Atlantic Broadband as a cable service provider within the city limits of Aiken. Under the new state laws, all we do is we would allow Atlantic Broadband or any other company that would like to provide cable service within the city limits to say they have that provision to be able to operate within the city limits. So if another company came in, let's say that next year AT&T decided they wanted to go ahead and provide more than just telephone service, we provided franchise agreements saying you can operate within the city limits. They still, all the rules and regulations have been set up by the state. We're just saying you now have a franchise agreement with the city to be able to operate in the city, and we set the rate again. So that's we have very limited powers at this point in time. So before you tonight, again, this is second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to renew our franchise agreement with Atlantic Broadband.
Okay, sir, thank you. This is the second reading and public hearing of this ordinance, and if there's anyone in the audience who would like to speak, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I move we approve an ordinance approving Atlantic Broadband as a cable services provider within the city limits of Aiken.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, we have a second. Okay. Any discussion?
Just for clarification for the record, this does not, Roger, prohibit competition.
That is correct.
Okay.
Right. Any other? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously.
And we always had that provision within even our ordinance that we allow competition.
Under new business, the first reading of an ordinance adopting the 2006 International Building and Property Maintenance Code. Mr. Leduc, please.
Yes, sir. I'm going to read this by title. It's an ordinance to amend Section 10-2 of the Aiken City Code to incorporate the 2006 editions of the International Building Code with modifications, International Fire Code with modifications, International Fuel Gas Code with modifications, International Plumbing Code, International Mechanical Code, International Energy Conservation Code, International Residential Code with modifications, and the International Property Maintenance Code, together with the new Section 10.3 concerning voluntary demolition of certain homes under the Demo 200 program, and to amend appropriate sections of the Aiken City Code by adding provision dealing with conflicting regulations. In a nutshell, in 2003, well, actually 2000 and 2003, and now in 2006, we're adopting the code, which has been accepted throughout the state of South Carolina. If we don't adopt it, then we would not be in compliance with the rest of the state with the codes that are currently are being provided. At the same time, while we were doing this, we said, let's go ahead and renumber and change our Demo 200 program. Nothing in that Demo 200 program has changed. We are obviously not taking down nearly as many homes as we once were. We're down to probably a handful every year, but that still is a very active program. And then we wanted to have in here a provision dealing with conflicting regulations, that if there were conflicting regulations, there is a provision there how to resolve that conflict. So for your consideration tonight, this is first reading of an ordinance adopting the 2006 International Building and Property Code and renumbering Section 10-3 and adding a provision dealing with conflicting regulations.
Okay, thank you. Do we have a motion and a second?
So moved.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously.
Item 2 is the first reading of an ordinance to establish new charges for water and sewer services. Mr. LaDuke.
Yes, sir. I'll read this by title only. It's an ordinance establishing new charges for water and sewer services. The city of Aiken, we tracked it for the last 10 years. And over the last 10 years, our expenses have been rising at a 5.7% rate. Most of this is due to fuel increases and chemical increases, electrical charges from the power company, which those three components are our major expenses along with personnel. Since that time, conversely, though, our revenue has only increased by a 2.7% rate. When we compared ourselves to the rest of the state of South Carolina, so we took all the other communities, both in our area and throughout the state, and there's a chart that shows the city of Aiken, when we averaged all these together, we are at 49% of what those rates were throughout the state of South Carolina. 49% below it. And we have the second lowest rate currently in the state of South Carolina. So the only rate that's lower than us is Myrtle Beach. And there's some reasons for that, but they're a little over a dollar less than we are. For this reason, to try to keep up with the expenses, and we've been trying to keep our personnel at a very, very low level this year. We only added one new position in here. We are going to be asking City Council for a rate increase. The Public Service Authority, which operates the sewage treatment plant for the county of Aiken, and all of our sewage is treated to that plant, they have already given us the request that they want to go up 15%. So they're going to be enacting a 15% rate increase. In the last 3 years, including this increase, that would be 30% increase that they have had. So even with our 5% increase, we will not keep up with what the county is asking to increase. Our cost alone just for the county is we'll be paying another $250,000 more than we did last year is our projection to cover those rates. This rate increase would add to the average monthly bill of $1.65 per month for water and sewer. If it was a couple that uses very little water, which many of the couples, especially those that are probably seniors, their rate increase would be much less than a dollar. For those that do a lot of irrigating, watering the lawns, it's probably going to be over $2 a month. But the average, we figure, is going to be $1.65 per month. So for your consideration tonight, this is first reading an ordinance to increase the water and sewer rates by 5%, starting with the July 1 billing. And upon City Council consideration, a second reading and public hearing would be held at the next regularly scheduled meeting.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second? We may have some discussion, but if we can get a motion and second first, then we can have any discussion that we need. We have no motion and second.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we adopt the ordinance to establish new charges for water and sewer services, and I'm doing this on the basis of many years ago, our city council had established that our city services would be on a cost basis to our citizens. And if we do not continue to keep the charges up to where the cost is, then we have no other alternative but to raise taxes in order to provide for the difference. So that is why I am moving that we establish new charges for water and sewer service.
Okay. Thank you, Don. I'll second the motion. And I would also like to tell the audience, those who have questions about why, you know, again, why this is necessary, but you know why it's necessary based on what we've said, and none of us like to raise these water fees. We will be talking about the budget in a few minutes, the overall general fund budget, which is your property taxes. And while I can't say that, I can say, but at this point, since we haven't taken a vote, it's my opinion, there will be no increase in property taxes again this year for 20 straight years, the 20th straight year on property taxes. So
I just wanted to get that out. Okay, we have a motion and second. Any discussion?
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
I would like just a point of clarification. Can we define infrastructure improvements? What exactly does that mean? Is that expanding our production capabilities, or exactly what does it mean?
Within the budget, and we'll get to that in a little while, but within the budget framework for the water and sewer, we do have a new well that is proposed to be a 1 million gallon per day well, and there would be a storage tank also that is being proposed. The storage tank will be at Woodside near the fire station that's on Silver Bluff Road, and the well, I believe, is we're trying to get that off the Pine Oak Road area. No, it's going to be the Silver Bluff Road area? Okay.
And is this due to growth? Is it attributable to growth and demand?
Part of it's due to the growth. Part of it is due to the water habits, especially in the Woodside area. They all seem to want to water first thing in the morning, and they typically, I would say that 90% or more of the residents out there have irrigation systems. But the certainly the 1 million gallon per day new well is because of growth. We do have within the fee structure, though, set up that every new resident is paying $750 per household towards an impact fee for some of that new growth.
But that impact fee is, in other words, this is over and above the amount we're receiving in impact fees.
No, right now, the impact fee will more than cover the new well and the storage tank. The reason for this 5% increase, again, is just covering the operation and maintenance costs that we have on a daily basis. The higher fuel costs, the higher power costs, the chemical costs that are just increasing, plus the typical salary increase for our employees has been around 4% for the last several years.
Well, it bothers me when we say infrastructure improvements, which is the language in here.
I just need to ask a question about the possibility of going to a tiered fee structure where those that are using the most money gets to pay the raise, and those that are staying and conserving may be able to stay where they are. I am sensitive to the fact that we do need to conserve, and as an incentive to get people to conserve, maybe if we had a fee structure such that those who water in the morning or whenever, that they use more water, that they pay more at a rate higher than those who maintain or are able to decrease their consumption of water in an effort to conserve. We need to have, as we did recycling, we need to have some type of program where we could reward those people who conserve versus those who can afford to water. They like beautiful grass and beautiful flowers, and so they water. And I'm wondering if we can't go to some fee structure similar to that.
If you look at Exhibit A that's in your packet, it shows that there is a sliding, increasing scale based on usage. If you have a small usage, you're using 87 cents per 100 cubic feet. But if you start using more than 500 cubic feet, then that goes up to $1.04. If you start using even more water, it goes up to $1.19. Use more water, it's up to $1.38. So currently there's a sliding scale. More water you use, the more expensive that quantity of water is per 100 cubic feet. We also have, for those that do a lot of watering in the summertime, we have a 5% surcharge on the water. So we charge more in the summer months, and then we also charge on a regular year-round basis based on the quantity of water. There is a sliding scale, increasing sliding scale. We used to at one time have a decrease, and the more water you use, the less it costs. We just reversed that a number of years ago. So it's just, as you stated, Councilwoman Clyburn, that we do charge more water for those that use more water. Those that conserve more water pay less money.
But those, but we'll all get a 5% increase is what I'm hearing you say, that even the lowest level will be increased by 5%.
So what you're saying is you would rather see us stay at a lower level at the initial small quantity and increase the other ones up higher instead of doing across the board 5%?
I think that's what I'm saying, is that if you're conserving, then you should not have to bear the brunt of a 5% increase. If you're actually conserving, working hard on conserving. And sometimes we conserve because we know we can't pay the end bill anyway, and so we need to not raise everybody the 5% if they're conserving, and those who want to water, let them pay 5% or 6%, whatever that works out to be.
And certainly we can do that if that's what council wants.
I'm sorry, I don't quite understand, Beverly, what you're saying, because I'm looking at this table here, and the more water you use, the more you pay.
That is correct, but everybody pays, everybody, no matter how little they use, is going to see an increase in what they're paying
now. Yeah, the base increase is 5%.
The base increase is 5%. And I'm saying if you have individuals whose water usage has stayed the same, and you have other people who are watering and they're using more water, and if they're not drinking it or bathing in it or cooking with it, they're using it on the outside. While I don't see anything wrong with that, if you can afford to do that, I certainly don't want to have someone pay an increase because others are not conserving like I'm trying to conserve. I'm trying the best I can to...
Let me just add to what Councilwoman Clyburn is saying. There are folks that are on fixed income, and you can almost look at their bill, and it's not going to vary very much from month to month. They're making choices between medical choices, that's going up. That's an increase there. They have choices with increasing groceries. And then we put the 5% on them for their water. And while it may not be much to them, I know of folks that have $15 left all over on a month just to budget with. That's a lot. I mean, they put their $5 in church, and they have that little bit left. And that's, I know that's hard to imagine, but there are families like that. And that's where I'm torn between me, a family like myself who can go out and turn that spigot on any time and just water, or someone who, again, you can almost set your pennies by with what they're paying every month.
And certainly, if council wanted to, you could have a 0% increase for those 0 to 500 cubic feet. And then the 500 to 1,000, you can have it at maybe 3%, and it escalates 5, 7, 9. You know, the more water you use, the higher the increase would be. That's another way of doing it.
I think that's probably the fairest way to do it, is that the more you use over a standard amount, then the more you should have to pay, because your usage is in excess of what you would need to use.
Currently, it's at 5% across the board.
Right.
Is conserving water a problem this year?
I believe that conserving water this year and in several more years to come is going to become more and more of an issue. We just gotten a report back from our well service looking at the last 10 years of our wells and the drawdown. In other words, we're in an aquifer, and every year we take a look at the drawdown of that aquifer. And although because our wells are so deep, you know, they're 500 feet in the ground, we don't have a problem today. But if that aquifer continues to dwindle, and it takes a long time for that aquifer to fill up, because it's not like surface water just works its way down 500 feet in the ground. It takes decades for that to go down, decades for it to go back up. But we saw just in the last few years several feet of a drawdown in that aquifer. Now, we're still able to pump out the same amount of water with our equipment because of the powerful pumps that we have, but the aquifer is going down. So there is a concern, and it's something that we'll probably be addressing with you later this year. We're going to go ahead and talk to you about some of those, I don't want to call them green issues because that's used so often, but we were talking the other day about sustainable issues. You know, how do we sustain our water supply in a good manner? So this is why we set up the system many years ago to have an increase in an inverted system. It used to be our system, more water you use, the less you pay. We inverted it about 10 years ago and we said, no, we really need to, the more water you use, the more you pay. And so that's the system we have today. And we could go ahead and make that system even reinforced more. That just means that those that do a lot of irrigation, instead of them going up 5%, they may see a 7 or 8% increase.
But on the other hand, it may not even be that much to even out. Am I not correct? Because the lower levels are not going to make up that much the increase.
They're not.
They typically don't use as much water. And so overall, I'm just saying that the two extremes, if you went zero here, you may have to be at 9% of the upper end to even it all on out.
What's hard to see here is to visualize the average user of water. I know I look at my water bill every month, and it's small, and then we get to the summer, it goes up because I'd like to water the grass, and then it goes down. Do you have any sense of what percentage of our water users are in each of these categories?
The average usage in the city of Aiken is right around 800 cubic feet. So they're within that 500 to 1,000, the average user.
Okay. And did I not recall looking at the budget data that part of our problem is that we had a significant reduction in water use by a major user?
They're Owens Corning, fiberglass. Back in the mid-90s started decreasing the amount of water that they consumed. They are at one time consuming 22% of our water usage on a daily basis, about 1 million gallons of water that we use. And they are now down to under 500,000 gallons per day. So they have significantly reduced the amount of water, and that's good. That's great for them. But it was that much less of a revenue stream coming in for us.
Roger, do you have any idea of the number of individuals within the city who have their own deep wells for the purpose of irrigation?
Larry, I know we have, there's a number of them that have the private wells, and we do allow that. That's fine. Do you have any idea, Larry, on the numbers, though? We're probably talking in the hundreds, Dick, not in the thousands.
I see more.
Yeah, we're getting more and more of them. That's why I don't know how many
and
we have.
That's anymore. Why I raise it, because I think if we raise the fee too high, we may drive more people to private wells, which then gives us a double problem. They're still using the aquifer.
Well, they're drawing from about 100 to 200 feet in the ground.
Okay.
Where we're down to 500.
Not the same aquifer at all?
No.
The only record that we would have of any wells that are being drilled for irrigation is just a notification from DHEC that well is being done, and we check it to make sure they don't punch it through a pipe somewhere. But that's basically all that we do have. The permits that I've seen, probably less than 25 over the past couple of years. So there's not a lot going down that DHEC is notifying us about. Now, if it's being constructed with a new home, we might never even see a permit on it because that's rolled into that new home permit. So possibly 100, that number would not surprise me at all.
We have a half a dozen ourselves. We've been doing the same thing.
Correct. And those wells, as Roger says, by and large, they are between 100 and 200 feet deep. There is a perched aquifer there on top of a clay table that most folks get into. Once you start getting below 200 feet, you start getting into some fairly hefty cost for an irrigation well, and it becomes really not a profitable venture. The wells that we use for irrigation are around 300 to 400 feet, but then we use 6-inch wells, and a normal well that folks use for irrigation is a 4-inch well. That's a 4-inch domestic well.
Larry, what does it cost to drop a well?
The last one that I did, I was out in the county, had no way to get water, and I dropped one 180 feet, and it cost right at $2,700 for a 4-inch well.
So that's just not cost-effective to drop a well.
Yes, it is.
Over time, yeah, it depends on how much.
Well, over time, but
I speak with a lot of knowledge about this.
Well, I don't know that a lot of people would drop a well just to get around paying a few extra dollars. But if they do, I guess I have no problems with that. It's just that I think that we should structure the fee in such a way that we encourage people to be prudent when they use water, so that we don't have to issue alternate days watering and those get into those kinds of things. We don't know how the summer is going to go. It could rain every other day, but it could be another summer where it's dry, and then we have to be concerned later on in the summer about how do we handle this if we have to have people to water every other day. I just think that we should structure the fees in such a way that those who use very little water should not have to bear the brunt of for those who have been using more water to water grass, where they're just using it for cooking and washing and bathing. They're not washing down cars or watering grass.
Yeah, but we need to keep in mind the goal here is we need to cover our cost, whether we are in a conservation mode or not. We need to gather enough revenue to pay our expenses.
Well, I think we can structure the fee in such a way that we could do that, because if you look at the 501 to 1,000 category, it's only $1.04. But you know, if you, and the more you use, the more it goes up.
It's $1.04 inside, but it's $2.08 outside.
Right.
Yeah. Well, so I mean, that if you're going to water your lawn, it's going to cost you twice as much as it is if you're going to wash your clothes. Would there be any benefit, Roger, if we, since most of the people are in the first two categories, if we made it from 0 to 250 and 250 to 5 and 5 to 750? Does that do anything?
Let me make this recommendation.
Other than make it more complicated?
I think you could, hopefully you could all agree that we need to have an increase to pay our expenses.
Yes.
If you feel that way, what I could do is you could pass on first reading a 5% increase, and we could bring to you at the next meeting then alternate A and alternate B. Alternate A would be not just across the board 5%, but a sliding scale based on zero, from 0 to 500, and then a sliding scale from that point. And you can look at each one as a comparison and see which direction you'd like to go. Both of them would come at, as a result, giving us around a 5% increase.
And then we'd know what the highest increase would be. I think
yeah,
we need to know
right.
that.
I think so,
before
too.
We vote on it.
And I'll go ahead then and give you some examples of today they're paying so much based on if they used 800 cubic feet. If they're using 2,000 cubic feet in the summertime, they'd be paying so much based on today versus in the future. And you could then see some comparisons. Okay?
I would appreciate that.
That's good plan.
I have another question here. The ordinance reads that we've had a 5.7% increase with revenue and a revenue increase of 2.7%. Can you give me some dollar figures here? I know that I should be smart enough to figure this out, but I can't. Give me some. Do we have
any? That's an average 5.7%, but let's just say 6%. and about a $10 million per year budget. So it's about a $600,000 increase every year in expenses, where we're coming back and our revenue's been only increasing at around $300,000. So you can see over a three-year period, we're falling several $1 million behind where we need to be. Now, we've caught up on some of that. The reason we're not $3 million behind is because we put in an impact fee. We did in 2004, I think at the urging of Councilwoman Waters, we put in $600,000 of the 1 cent sales tax going towards infrastructure renewal. So we were able to put some money aside so the increase wouldn't have to be quite as bad. But we went several years without an increase. We probably should have had an increase of 3-4%. We're just gotten further behind, and that's why the good news is we're the second lowest in the state. The bad news is we're the second lowest in the state.
Good way to put it. I think there were 31 or 32 cities that we compared with.
And we could have compared with
We were the second. There was one lower than we were. I like that idea that Roger put forth to us. Do others?
I do like that, Roger. I think to look at a sliding scale would be, would be good.
So we have a motion and a second already for first reading, 5% increase. So we'll take a look at it. Of course, we'll take a look at it at second reading based on what our city manager is going to put together for us.
So, so the recommendation is to pass this on first reading for what now? I'm not sure.
Yeah, to pass this at 5%. And then he's going to, Roger's going to, they're going to work up a sliding scale as Beverly introduced to us earlier. And then we have a choice of what we want to do. We can, at that point, if we don't agree, still we'll table it. Second reading. Mm-hmm. Until we get something that we're happy with.
Do I understand correctly that people can go online and look at their history of water use so they could gauge how this is going to affect them if it were 5%?
Certainly. You know, it would be a little bit harder with a sliding scale to determine what your rates would be. You know, 5% is very simple. You just go 5% higher than what you're paying now. With a sliding scale, they'll have to do a little bit more work, but we could put the new rates on.
Let me just add to that, that the affected people that I'm concerned about will not have the ability to go online to look at this. So that's my concern.
Can they call the city office and get the same information, Roger?
Sure. Anita's office would work with them, because again, you have to go ahead and it's work with fractions. 0 to 500 is paying one rate, 500 to 1,000 is paying another rate. Then the same thing with the sewer. You have a base rate, then you have a sliding scale. And so it's we're not doing it to try to complicate things, but we're trying to do it to be fair with everybody.
Okay. Again, we've got a motion and a second. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously on first read. Item 3 is the first reading of an ordinance amending Chapter 32 of the Aiken City Code regarding commercial garbage service. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance amending Chapter 32 of the Aiken City Code regarding commercial garbage service. Hopefully this one's a little bit easier. As Council Member Wells stated a little while ago, we have always tried to equal our revenue versus our expenses. Last year, about a year and a half ago, we brought to your attention that we were about $135,000 or so short in our revenues as far as the commercial garbage service was concerned. And we gave you several options. Option number one, let's just not do any more commercial garbage service. You know, there's private entities out there that'll do it. We can get out of the service. Option number two is let's go ahead and increase our expenses to match the revenue. Then option number three was, let's do it over a three-year period, and you chose option number three to do it over a three-year period. So we raised the rates last year by one-third. So now we took our expenses versus revenue, we're splitting it in half. And so tonight we're coming to you with an increase of $1.76 per trip. Now what that means is the amount of money that they're paying on a volume basis. We pick up an 8-cubic-yard dumpster, they're still going to pay the same amount that they did this year, but we're increasing the amount to make the trip going to service that dumpster. And one of the reasons we're doing that is the cost of fuel has gone up, as everybody knows, quite a bit. And so our basic increase in expenses is in fuel costs and getting to that dumpster. We're trying to get people to start thinking, is there some way I could do this without having to get picked up three times a week? Can I get two dumpsters that I could pick up at the same time instead of having just one dumpster that I get picked up several times a week? And so we're trying to re-educate individuals on the best way to have their garbage service. So tonight we're asking for this rate increase. It'll raise approximately $65,000 in revenue. If everything were equal and there were no more increases in cost, next year we could raise another $65,000. I don't think it'll be that way because there will be additional increases. But we're to that point. We're in the second year of the three-year process. So for your consideration tonight, this is first reading of an ordinance amending Chapter 32 of the Aiken City Code regarding commercial garbage service fees. And upon your consideration, a second reading public hearing would be held.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
So moved.
Mr. Mayor, I'm going to second this because I want to make it clear that this is not residential garbage pickup. This is commercial. I think there's some merit in discussing the fact that they need to work out some way to reduce the number of trips that are made, and I'm going to go ahead and second this.
Also, the city's commercial rates are extremely competitive. I mean, they're still...
They are. What has happened when we went ahead and allowed competition within the system, the larger providers, Waste Management, BFI, went ahead and cherry-picked some of the more easier ones to get that they could go ahead and make money on versus our rates. Our rate was more for the average customer. So we are very competitive. And I say this in a good way. I wish we were in a position where the commercial rates were so much lower than we are that everybody went to the outside commercial. But our rates are still such that we are very competitive and people do not want to switch.
Okay. We've got a motion and second. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 4, first reading of an ordinance setting the millage rate for fiscal year 2008 to 2009. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance to provide for the levy of taxes for ordinary city purposes and for capital development purposes in the city of Aiken for the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2008, to set the millage rate thereat 66 mills and provide for the expenditures thereof. Last fall, City Council reduced their millage rate from 71 mills to 66 mills. This is the fourth time, I believe, that we have actually reduced the rates. We were at one time at 120 mills. We've almost cut that in half at 45%. And despite the fact that we are getting less revenue from the state because of the telecommunication tax and vehicle taxes, which is about $1 million in loss every year, we've been able to keep our millage rate lower and not have to raise the taxes for 20 years. So we are, again, not asking for any tax increases. And by the way, the water and sewer is a separate fund, a totally separate fund of money. Water and sewer stands alone. We don't take money out of the water and sewer and bring it into the general fund. So it pays, it's again a standalone fund. So when we say there's no tax increases this year because we're not going up in residential or stormwater or fire fees or anything else, we actually have been able to hold our fees and our expenses to where they're at. So for your consideration tonight, this is first reading of an ordinance setting the millage rate for 2008-2009 at 66 mills, which again is a no increase for the last 20 years.
Very good. Do we have a motion and second?
Mr. Mayor, I move that we adopt this ordinance on first reading, setting the millage rate for the year 2008-2009 to 66 mills.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, we have a second as well. Any discussion? I would just like to say to our staff and our employees, pass it on, that they're doing a super job on trying to keep the cost low. And we're very fortunate as a community to have people still coming into our community. So many towns and cities across the state are going the other way. And so because I think collectively with our citizens and our ordinances and what have you, our community is still thriving community. And so that allows us to keep the property taxes, general fund taxes, down. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 5, first reading of an ordinance approving a budget for the fiscal year 2008-2009. Mr. Duke.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance adopting a budget proposed by the city manager containing estimates of proposed revenue and expenditures by the city of Aiken for fiscal year beginning July 1, 2008 and ending June 30, 2009, declaring that the same shall constitute the budget of the city of Aiken for such fiscal year. And before I go into this budget a little bit, let me just piggyback on what the mayor was saying and the fact that if it wasn't for growth, and I know we talk about growth an awful lot and the pros and cons about growth, if it wasn't for growth, growth is what has been adding to our tax rolls. It's because of the growth that there are more businesses who are paying the business excise tax, the franchise fees. But if the growth did stop all of a sudden, We like several other communities in South Carolina, would have to look at where our revenue source would come from, or do we lower services. So growth does make a major difference within the city of Aiken. In this next year in the budget, we based the budget on the different things that council has mentioned during the year, especially the horizons of different services that you'd like to have for our citizens. We right now have already talked about the water and sewer. We talked about the garbage. Some of the major areas within the budget that we're looking at is we're planning on doing a transportation study on the north side. Again, before a rapid growth occurs on the north side, we want to take a look at where do we possibly need to have some new roads. Best example is Highway 1 and Highway 19 going out to I-20, there's only one intersecting road, Reynolds Pond Road, between I-20 and Rutland Drive. And if that area continues, it's going to be just like the area between Whiskey Road and Silver Bluff, and that people complain about now because there's only Doherty Road. So we'll be looking at this transportation study. Where do new roads need to go in the future? What type of improvements need to be made on the roads? Let's go ahead and plan for those roads now before the development occurs 10, 20, 30 years from now. We're also looking at doing a study to traffic model for our community so that we can better project what the traffic will be like and what roads need to have improvement and when you improve those. A new playground at Governor Acre Park. Governor Acre Park right now in the southeast side of the city has no playground. We were given a lot, actually bought it for this particular playground, and we'll be putting a basketball court in there and a small playground set. So that's in the budget. A dog park. A number of people come to you asking for a dog park. We have within this budget also money in here to continue the facade grant program in the downtown. It's worked great. The spay-neuter program, library funding of the best friends, the Downtown Development Association, our character education, the continuation of Northside Revitalization, The senior tax write-off, the post-retirement health benefits, which are now a requirement based on new federal laws, succession management, and the completion of our PRT master plan. We'll also be talking about later this evening is our municipal building and the expansion of that, and making sure that in the future as we need more space, we're ready for it, and the continuation of the Rye Patch work, which is basically complete on the downstairs, but we have to do some work still on the upstairs. Within the budget, we do have 5 new employees for public safety, and we have 4 part-time employees, and 1 part-time employee becoming full-time. There's $300,000 in the planning and traffic studies, $270,000 for public safety computers. It's our last year of funding for the African American Cultural Arts Center and the Railroad Depot. And the utility budget, getting back to the question that Councilmember Smith asked, we do have a new well, a 1 million gallon storage tank, and $310,000 in wastewater and some water improvement projects. You may have seen some markings on Whiskey Road. I think they're mainly blue and some yellow and stuff. Every year we seem to get one or more major breaks of the water line on Whiskey Road. We plan on designing this year, hopefully start looking at replacing the Whiskey Road water line, which I like to say there's alternative ways to get around that, but for a month or two we'll have a little bit of a mess on Whiskey Road. But that is a water line that's been in the ground for well over 50 years and needs replacing. From the 1 cent sales tax, the public safety substation, which we broke ground on this about a month ago, it will be underway. We are funding 2 new fire trucks. The public safety, we have a training center. Many of you have been there, but we have a burn center there that many of the fire departments around our county use. And we have a qualifying pistol range there. And then we're going to be adding a training center where we'll actually be able to have a classroom at that location, which frees up some of the space over at public safety. We have money in the budget for the Hitchcock Woods to hopefully start some stormwater work out there. The Pawnee-Nielsen connector, we think we got the last easement on that today. So hopefully we'll be able to start construction on that in the next couple of months. We have money in there for a walking trail at Citizens Park, so when the moms and dads drop their kids off and they want to get some exercise, they certainly could do so. And then the normal street resurfacing work that we do. A lot of work, as mentioned by the department heads, literally hundreds of hours has been put into the budget. I really appreciate the hard work that staff has really put together on this budget. And we are pleased that we're able to present this to you without any increases as you have asked for every year, but we're able to accommodate you this year with this budget. So for your consideration tonight, this is the first reading of an ordinance to approve the budget for the City of Aiken for fiscal year 2008-2009.
Thank you, Roger.
Mr. Mayor.
And I think we all appreciate the work that you and the staff have done year in and year out. Thank you very much. And to Anita and her finance group, just everyone has an input in this budget, all the departments, we thank you very much for what you do. Beverly, excuse me.
Yes, I would like to thank staff as well, but I wanted to point out 2 things that I have gotten some questions about lately, and one is the senior tax write-off. Tell me again when it is that seniors can apply for that.
They can apply at any time they would like to for the program. They have to be 60 years of age and above.
60 years of age.
And what, you know, like if they apply today, it may take a year to 2 years to get to them because we are working off, I think, the 2006 list. And once we finish that, we can then finish off the 2007, then get to the 2008. Now, that doesn't mean we'll call up the people on 2006 list, and a lot of them maybe can't work or they a certain assignment that's more physical than others. So we do get to some of them in 2007 and 2008 more quickly on those that maybe the job is to go out. One person I remember did a sidewalk survey for, so I had to walk around 20-some miles to check out all the sidewalks. So it was painting the light poles. So some are more physically demanding, and then other ones are more clerical, things where you could sit down. We had a person in our office just the other day folding letters and stuffing envelopes for us. Mm-hmm. And but we don't have as many of those jobs. But they could sign up at any time they want to, as long as they're 60 years of age and live within the city of Aiken.
Okay, I just wanted to explain to the audience what that means, and that is that if you're 60 years old, you live in the city, and you can come in and work not for wages, but you can work to pay off your homeowner's taxes.
That's minimum wage.
And you can come in and apply for that. Okay.
And they get paid minimum wage.
They get paid minimum wage.
Get on the list.
Just get on the list, and if you're retired and you would like something to do and be constructive and especially help out your city, it would be a good thing to do. And
I would point out the county also has a program.
Right,
identical,
the county does.
So.
Okay. And the other thing was the Best Friend Express. That is a county project, is that not right? Well, are you... The Best Friend Express.
It's not with the
project, but it's been about
the
county. Right, right. And someone called and wanted to know why we didn't have bus service, but we do. It's not just for senior citizens. Is that not right? It's for anybody who wants to stand there and wait for it and catch a ride. And with today's economy and the gas prices, you may want to consider doing that. They seem to be pretty full nowadays, but... ridership is up, I do know that, and you may want to take advantage of that.
And reliability is up, too.
Hmm.
They're a lot more reliable. They've really worked hard to keep it
regular
schedule.
And I think it's a good budget, and I'm satisfied that we're going to work on the sliding scale for the water increase, and so, you know, I'd like to move that we approve this on first reading, with the second reading at our next regularly scheduled meeting.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any other discussion?
I could not resist, unfortunately, because Roger put in his story about how well growth pays for itself. So for the benefit of a few folks out there, I'm paying about 15% more in taxes this year myself, even though we haven't raised the millage rates. So one of the things indeed is, as property values rise, our revenues increase. Therefore, we don't have to raise the millage rate. But in fact, the tax income has increased. That's a fact. The other thing is, and I got to say this, we have been... In effect, we have built a lot of wonderful developments out there. I live in one, I'm happy with it. But I would also say, in a sense, we borrowed from the future, because right now we're looking for $107 million, $106 million for new roads that need to be constructed around the city. So somebody's going to have to pay for those roads. We now have a plan, I guess, that they're going to be paid from penny sales tax over the future. Then I will also say one other thing. We had the Clemson study done just last year or the year before, and that study made the point that for every $1.16 spent, you got $1 in tax revenue in. I believe that's right, about right. So I just want to clarify those points a little bit, because I don't hold completely with the idea that development pays for itself. And that's been out in the paper recently also. I disagree with it, and I think Mr. Hart Hightower is out there agreeing with me. Thank you, sir.
Okay. We have a gentleman that would like to speak.
Mr. Mayor.
Yep.
James Matthews from the Edgewood community.
Okay, okay.
I talked to several of my friends. Got to go into council and stay scared. Let me get back to my point. Our budget. You know, I know we don't want to raise taxes, but I have one question. What do we do with late fee money in the water department? Now, take aside that we need vehicles to pay overtime for leaking pipes, busted pipes, whatever. My suggestion is, and I don't know if it's worth it or not. If you pay a late water bill, that money should be set aside to purchase vehicle or pay those wages instead of having that to go, instead of dipping into the budget where everybody has to pay.
Let's answer your question.
Okay.
Roger, would you like to answer? It goes into the utility fund, I suppose.
All the funds and fees that we get for water, sewer, whether it's late fees, impact fees, they all go into one fund. Now, we do keep an accounting of the impact fees because that is strictly used by state law for future improvements to our system. But otherwise, all the fees go into the utility fund and stay in the utility fund.
Right. But I'm saying the water, just with the late fee on the water, it can go towards paying labor and purchasing vehicles or equipment to better our city.
Well, and it does.
But I'm saying, but you're dumping all the utility money in one pot.
It's in the utility
fund. But it's in utility.
It's in that fund.
It has to, by state law, stay there.
Mm-hmm. But my question is, why do we still have leaking pipes and busted water lines in the city, and we still haven't done anything for as the north side, the south side, the east side, but we still have these pipes in the infrastructure that needs to be fixed? That's my question.
Okay, and we're fixing that infrastructure all the time.
It's a hard job. I'm not complaining.
Just like I said, on Whiskey Road, we're getting ready to replace that water line. But typically a water line will last 40, 50, 60 years. It's the service line going from the main line to the house that generally fails much sooner than the main line.
That's correct. That's where I want to know where that money is.
And we replace several hundreds of those every year.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, James. Any other comments? We have a motion and a second.
Well, I just want to clarify one thing. You have a statement here. This is our last year to help fund the railroad depot. We've already voted, a majority of council voted to maintain and staff that facility.
Okay, I stated that, okay, to just clarify, it's the last year out of the accommodation tax money. The $250,000 that council voted in 5 years ago.
So I just want to make it clear that we are nowhere near paying for this.
That said, council has stated earlier that they would like us to, they're going to give us the facility once it's over and it'll become a city facility.
And we'll have an office there.
Well, we've already had that discussion. Yep. I didn't agree with it, but we had it. And I just want to point out that this is certainly not the end of the city's contribution, probably to either of these projects, but I think the one we're really committed to right now is the depot.
Well, I think, as Roger said, Jane, and I took it that way, maybe no one else did, these are the payments that we said we would pay, we would give. Not
right.
Operating funds going on from this year on, but those specific payments that we said that we would give to each of these entities.
From the accommodations tax, but I don't think it reads that way. And
And I apologize if it doesn't. And when we do take over the depot, we'll set it up similar to how we've done with the theater, so we'll know what the expenses are and what the revenue comes in at, and we'll see if there is an imbalance between the two. And if so, how do we go ahead and fund that imbalance that we have?
Okay, any other discussion?
Yeah, I would just want to echo what Councilman Smith said about growth, and that is it has to be managed and it has to be controlled, and I recently became aware of the same numbers that he has, so there's some growth that we obviously want, and we certainly never ever want to get to the point of no growth, but it needs to be carefully controlled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think we pretty well do that. Any other comments? If not, show of hands, please, all in favor. Okay, passes unanimously. Item 6, resolution authorizing lease agreement with the Washington Group for the use of the parking lot. Mr. LeDuc.
Several years ago, we entered into an agreement with Regions Bank. And Regions Bank, we wanted to be able to utilize their surface parking lot for events that would happen on Newberry Street, also for events that would happen at the theater. The same thing is now happening with Washington group's parking lot. They have a parking lot where 20 spots are designated to them. That was part of the agreement they had when they got this building. The land was purchased from Regions Bank for that. But with the shortage of parking in the downtown and everybody going on to Newbury Street, several individuals are now parking in their lot during the day, some utilizing local restaurants and other areas, and so they would like to go ahead and enter into an agreement similar to what we have for Regions, where there will be a sign notifying people that this is a private parking lot, except during nights and weekends when anybody can utilize it. But since it's going to become a quasi-city parking lot during those times, this would state that during those periods of time, off hours when the general public uses the lot, we'd have the general liability for any problems that would occur within that area. It's almost exactly the same agreement that we had with Regions Bank. Leslie Price has recused herself since she does work for that company. And we are asking City Council to approve the resolution addressing responsibilities of both the City and URS Washington Group concerning use of the parking lot for their offices.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
Move for approval, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
Okay. Second. Any
just
discussion?
Just a quick question. The insurance is only applicable during the hours that it's used for public parking?
That is my understanding, yes. That's what we do with the Regions Bank, and that's the same thing we have here.
Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. On to item four, petitions and requests. The first item is a utility request for Summer Lake Subdivision off of Wire Road. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. We tabled this at the last meeting so that a representative from Atlantic Coast Properties can be here tonight. This is the property that currently it faces Highway 1. The City of Aiken granted water to that subdivision a number of years ago. They're not built out, but a large portion of it has been occupied, and so they are getting ready to open up a number of about 240 acres, which would have 179 detached single-family homes with the new entrance on Wire Road, so you could enter the development from either Highway 1 or Wire Road. Within that, they would have approximately 57 acres of open space, walking trails, small parks. A traffic study was not needed based on the number of homes that would be in there, again, the 179, and the fact that some will be going out to Highway 1, some to Wire Road, and Wire Road is at a level of service C. The Planning Commission unanimously approved the request for water, and there are 12 different conditions here that all of the conditions that were agreed upon would be recorded within 60 days, that we approve the water, sewer, not sewer, but storm water and roads, that a waiver be granted to allow the road to exceed the 1,000-foot limit for a dead end. They establish a crash gate southwest of the main entrance on Wire Road to allow emergency access. That the entrance median be as shown and described in the narrative and be landscaped, which would be approved by the planning director, including the tree selections and preservation of some of the pines. That the project comply with the signed regulations for the residential, all new wiring be underground. The houses are consistent with the elevations or renderings as submitted to you. That no manufacturing home be permitted. That the applicant conditions be met prior to occupancy of any dwelling unit. The vested right provision would apply, that all applicable conditions be met within 180 days of approval by City Council. So for your consideration tonight, this is approval of a utility request for water for the Summer Lake subdivision off of Wire Road.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
Is the owner here tonight?
Colson Back, Carolina Engineering Service, Greenwood. I am where the engineers representing the owner.
Mr. Wood, did you say?
Holson Back.
Holson Back, excuse me.
I wanted to ask about the...
First of all, I would like to apologize, Mr. Mayor, and all members of the council. I didn't realize I was supposed to be here at your last meeting. I apologize to each of you.
No, okay, no problem.
No problem. You're the same company that did the project across the street?
That's correct.
Okay, it's... Let me compliment you on that. It's beautiful.
Fine.
Especially those houses around the water. But I know you remember when you did that, you had already done your entry, and it did not, it was a little too big for what we normally allow. And I just want to make sure that we keep that in mind when we do the entrance to the next project.
Yeah. We're having a very similar entrance coming off of Wire Road that is currently off of US 1.
Similar to the one that you've got on number one?
It'll be very similar to that, yes. With the exception being there will not be existing trees in it because there are only planted pines over there and it will have to be landscaped.
You mean the entrance?
That's correct.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that a little larger than what we normally allow? I don't know. I'm just asking. It seems to me I remember that coming up with the first project.
We are beyond your requirements, yes.
That's good.
Okay.
You are beyond the requirements for the one that's on Route 1.
Requirements.
I'm sorry, I don't understand what you're saying.
We exceed your minimum requirements for landscaping
okay.
and so forth for okay. an entrance into a development.
Okay, very good.
At the last time, I think what you're asking is they had to ask for a waiver on the signage on Highway 1. And I don't know if you're asking for a waiver on that again or if your signage is going to be smaller on Wire Road. It is going to be smaller to meet our sign requirements. And the reason they said that last time is because at 55 miles an hour on Highway 1, and because it's a divided five-lane road, they asked that the size, the entrance area, and the signage be larger than normal. And you did grant that. But they are not asking for that on the Wire Road
That's
side.
My question, is that you're going to be conforming on the Wire Road entrance?
The Wire Road project will be a more upscale project than Summer Lakes. If you were pleased with Summer Lakes, you will certainly be pleased with Abella.
It looked to me in Summer Lakes, one of the things that I thought was so attractive is that on lots that are not built on right now, you've pretty much left a lot of trees and greenery, it seems to me. So I am so worried. I don't know if you're aware of what happened over on West Pine Log Road, where we were supposed to have hilly terrain with trees and everything, and the next thing we know, everything's been leveled and it looks like the Dust Bowl out there. And now the houses aren't built and the trees are gone and it's really awful. But I mean, as long as you're doing the way you did it, it seems to me is so much more financially sound. It keeps your project looking good, it seems to me. Are you planning that same sort of in other words, you're not going to take all those trees down until the houses are built?
No. The site we're working on now is predominantly planted pines. We did not have right. that on the Summer Lakes project.
Right.
A lot of the pines will be removed, but they will be replaced selectively by landscaping. And we're also building a chain of four lakes in there that will be larger than the Wildwood and Johnson Mill Lake.
So you'll go ahead then and build the roads through the area first?
The ponds will be built first because that will be our sediment control.
Okay.
And then we'll start road and utility construction.
And there are no plans to clear cut that property?
Not entirely, no.
Is the general terrain going to remain? In other words, it won't be like that?
No. The existing, we worked with the existing topography.
Thank you.
Let me just say that, sir, I'm here. How are you? I have walked your property at Summer Lake, And without any guidance from us, I saw how you laid out your lot plan and your building of the property, and that's without us encouraging you to do certain things. I know that City Council does not like to use the word trust anybody in this climate, but somehow it leads me to say that based on not having any guidance from us in terms of how you were going to develop those lots, you did the right thing, and somehow I believe you're going to do the right thing with this property that we're discussing tonight.
Well, let me say this. I did the concept on Summer Lakes. I did not do the concept on Abella. It was done by land planners from Tallahassee Plus
okay.
Partners. We took their concept and made engineering drawings from their concept. I did not do the concept on Abella.
Well, that says something different. Okay.
Are there going to be, you mentioned the conservation subdivision at the end. Are there going to be any walking trails in this area?
There's 57 acres, as well as I remember, that's left for common areas, and that will be a combination of lakes, walking trails, clubhouse, recreation areas. We are way beyond any amenity requirement that exists.
Thank you.
One other question I have for you, and that is, what is the in the larger development, I guess that's the first one, Abella?
Yes.
What are the price range of the homes in that one going down to the end?
I do the engineering. I do not do the marketing.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Okay, are there any other questions?
No. Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve this with the conditions listed by the Planning Commission. I think there are 12 of them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I'll second it. Is there any other discussion? Thank you, sir, very much. Looks like a very nice development. If there's no other discussion, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Item 2 is a resolution to accept the deed of dedication for utilities and the Woodside Plantation. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. Last meeting you had 3 dedications. This is an additional one. This is Phase 3, Section 6B that we are bringing to you tonight for approval. At the next meeting, I understand that we'll have several other ones that we are now looking at. Catching up from several years where there wasn't any dedications. This does not include any roads whatsoever. City personnel did look at this and no defects were observed and are recommending that the utilities be approved for City Council with a deed of dedication for Section 6B of Woodside Plantation.
Okay, do we have a motion and second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor, that we approve this resolution to accept a deed of dedication for the utilities in Woodside.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Item 3 is a request to change nonpartisan election date. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. At our meeting in April, we had discussed briefly the June 10th date to have the election process for allowing the voters to determine whether or not they want to have nonpartisan elections within the city of Aiken. As council knows, we're one of just a handful of cities within the state of South Carolina that still has partisan elections. At that time, I think a lot of council members, we talked about the fact that there was going to be an election also in a primary form for a House seat and for a Senate seat. Some of our electorate will be going to those primaries. Some of our electorate will not be going to those primaries. We also, that by June 10th would be the summer session. I have heard from a few council members that are now concerned that maybe we should have a standalone election. As you well know, there is no time factor involved with this. This will not take place till 2009. So we can either go ahead and continue it on June 10th. We have already written the Department of Justice. We're waiting for the reply back. If we decide tonight that we want to hold it on a different date, so it would be even more standalone than it is right now, we would just have to go back to the Department of Justice and inform them that council rethought this, passed this by a voice vote to have it on a different date. We would then just need to go back to Stuart Biedenbaugh and let him know at the election that we are not going to do it on June 10th, take it off the ballot, and we'll have a standalone. The only expense we've had to date is we have advertised it, I believe, one time, twice now, in the paper for June 10th. Again, we would just have to notify the county, notify the Department of Justice, if council decides on a different date. So before you tonight is discussion to determine if you want to keep it on June 10th or to select an alternate date for the referendum for the nonpartisan election date.
Okay, thank you, sir. As we discuss this, I guess we need to discuss why we think we ought to change it, number one. It's already been set. It's been set a long time. It's been advertised. I understand there's some absentee ballots already submitted. I don't know about that for sure.
No.
Money. It's going to cost more if we change it. I'm not against it, but we've already started a process here, and I'm wondering why it would need to be changed.
The initial discussion when we talked about it was that this would be a standalone election. I presume that the reason the state made that law was to make this issue the predominant issue of the election. There is a high contested primary on that same date that I don't think has anything to do with this. I was so shocked. I mean, June 10th was set, but we didn't set it June 10th. I read it in the newspaper, just like you all did, I'm sure. And I was really surprised to see that it was the date of the primary. I mean, I don't see why it can't be the November election if all we have to do is plunk another table down in the room and say this is the vote for the nonpartisan referendum, you know, or partisan, whatever you want. So, I mean, if we want to get the most people to vote and we can have it with other elections, then let's do it when we have the most people voting. But I thought the point the state made was that that was not to occur. And so I was very confused when I saw it was the day of another election. And frankly, if I had known it was that day, if it had come to us, and we also had said we didn't want it to be in the summertime. I believe that was part of our discussion. And if it had come to us, I would have objected then, before it was advertised. But I didn't know until it was advertised.
Yeah. I certainly also did not know that really that it was firmly set that it was going to be the 10th of June. And so that is a problem. And I question from the very beginning, it is not going to be a standalone election. We've worked out this process where people will actually have to sign up twice. They have to come and register for the primary, then they have to come and register again. So to me, that doesn't make sense. What I'm also afraid of is some people will come and vote for the one and say, I'm done, out of here. So it confuses, I think, the nonpartisan issue. That's really where I'm at.
I could take the opposite view. You know, they're coming for one, so they're there. So it's easy to vote across the room for the other. And I guess according to the Election Commission, the definition qualifies for standalone. Now, it may not in our own opinion, but the fact remains. Ivan, so you think you're going to get more people to vote, and that may well be. But even city council has elections on the odd years and not on the general election. So are some fearful that there's going to be a certain group of people coming that are against it? Is that
the point? No, I don't think that's the point.
Because
I think
party chairmen came to council and said they were against this, remember? And we voted to at least let the people decide.
That's right.
And that's what we're doing.
And so what we are doing on the 10th of June is we are holding, I thought, it's a Republican primary and a Democrat primary the same day. And really, we're talking a nonpartisan issue. To me, it should be a nonpartisan day, and people come and express themselves either as partisans or a preference for nonpartisan, all at the same time without the distraction of an election. That's really...
And when we talked about the cost, we didn't talk about combining it with anything else. We knew what a standalone election was going to be.
And the first time we mentioned a date, it was clear that it was supposed to be standalone, and I'm not sure doing it the same day as a primary is a standalone.
I guess that wasn't clear.
No, it wasn't.
It was not.
What is standalone?
That was mentioned at the meeting.
I think standalone, at the time I heard it, meant that it would not be with any other election. I don't have a preference as to whether you change it or whether you keep it the same. I just... if the people are going to decide, and you know, I guess they could decide at any point.
Let me tell you what my aging memory recalls. June 10th was mentioned. As I recall, Roger mentioned June 10th. Mm-hmm. It was mentioned that a primary was going on. We could combine that election with the primary. I am opposed to this. I stood opposed to it at the time, and I'm still opposed to it, and contend that because everybody else is doing something, Aiken doesn't have to do the same thing. So that's where I stand there until someone tells me differently. If my constituents feel differently, then I will listen to them. But that is what, based on what I know about these kinds of elections, I stand opposed to it.
Stand opposed to the nonpartisan method. But as far as making the decision by the constituents, when do you feel that should be done? Or you don't care? You'd rather it not be done at all?
My position at that time is I do not support it based on what my investigation has seen of nonpartisan elections. And Aiken, I know, is a different town, and with my knowing what exists here, I do not support a nonpartisan form of voting.
I don't think it's a matter of whether you support a nonpartisan election, a council, or a partisan council. I think for me it's a matter of if this is an issue that has been discussed. I did not see any reason why I could not let the people decide which way they wanted it, because it comes up from time to time. I don't have a personal preference as to how I'm elected, because the issues that we face are not Democratic or Republican issues. They're citizens of Aiken issues. And so it didn't really matter that much to me which way it goes. It's just that anytime I get the opportunity to let the citizens decide which way they want to go with it, I'm going to err on the side of giving them the right to decide. And so to say that I am for nonpartisan election would be a mistake. I am for the public having the right to decide which way they want it. And if you want it nonpartisan, you come and you say, yes, I want it nonpartisan. If you want it to remain as it is, you come and you vote, no, I don't want it nonpartisan. I want it to stay partisan. And I don't have a problem with you doing that, because I have not polled all the people in my district, nor have I polled all the people in the city. That is a good way to poll them, is to have the election and let them see which way they want it. If they want it to stay like it is, it can stay like it is. If they want to change it, they can change it. But I just would like for you, as citizens, to decide.
Excuse me, come on up, please, to the mic. Come to the mic.
This may make a difference in your...
Let's do keep in mind that they are... Wait a minute, excuse me. There are absentee ballots available on this, so if people are going to be out of town in June, on June 10th, they can certainly sign up on an absentee ballot like they can any other time of an election.
Now, as a matter of fact, one of the primary candidates was walking my street this evening. I asked him about an absentee ballot because I'll need one, and he said I could go down tomorrow and vote. So this choice of whether or not to have this issue on the ballot may already be on there.
It's been resolved, right?
But I didn't confirm that because it was after business hours. So I don't know if you all may want to do that.
Yeah.
May already be on there.
Well, I've been told there will be absentee ballots, but whether they're available right today or not, I don't know.
But that. My understanding was that Stuart was holding back on that until such time as we made a decision.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But they have started absentee ballots.
There will be absentee ballots. That's the point.
Yes. Advanced voting.
Whether it's June 10th or whatever date it is. Yeah.
Let me say very clearly that I have no problem with the citizens of Aiken voting on this matter. I merely stated my personal feelings. I've been wrong on issues before as I voted, and I could be wrong again, but I'm only stating my personal feelings. And if I am wrong, I talked with a number of folks, and I will change my mind at that time, but I'm just stating my personal feelings.
And you stated that the last time. You wanted the voters to have a chance to say what they wanted, and I think that's all we want. My point is it's going to be a lot clearer as to what this choice is if it's not thrown in with a primary that some of the people get to vote in and others of them don't get to vote in. I think it's very confusing, and I think it would be great to have an election where it's straight out. Then I think we're all willing to accept whatever result the voters.
June 10th is going to be.
Mr. Mayor, it's obvious that it's already on the ballot for June 10th. There are people that have already voted to change this in the middle of the stream right now. I don't know what that will do.
I don't think we know that people have already voted. I think I had understood Stuart was holding this out until we talked about this.
He knew that.
But I could be wrong. I just don't know.
Did someone ask him to vote or what?
No.
He knew it was on the ballot?
Has someone given him the language?
I have not talked with them. I was just shocked when I found out this was a date. After all that discussion about it had to be by itself, because I was hoping, as I said before, we could throw it in with the November election and get everybody involved.
Well, in talking to the Justice Department, they request that this be a standalone vote, but they were aware that this was part of a June 10th primary.
Well, then I'm just have a simple mind, because standalone doesn't mean with another vote to me. I don't understand it.
Mr. Mayor, we had this discussion with our city solicitor several meetings ago, and he even got up and clarified to us that once he contacted the Justice Department, as long as there was a separate table, it would be considered a standalone election. Mm-hmm. So this is not all brand new to us, folks. We've heard this for quite some time.
I did not remember that discussion of a table constituting a standing alone election. I just don't. Maybe I just was...
Well, he asked several questions.
I don't.
I recall the discussion.
Those were in the term of possibilities, but not reality, because we didn't even know if the Justice Department, they had a certain time frame in which to respond, and it was somewhere in that time frame. We didn't know for sure that it would be on the 10th of June or any other time. That was
the conversation that we had here in council, and it came from our city solicitor, and he said that he had heard from the Judicial Department, and that if a separate table set up in that on June 10th, on this election day, would constitute a stand-alone election.
Yeah.
Now, we all discussed it that night, year-end council meeting.
I
haven't gone back to the minutes.
Was that the Justice Department of the state, which is...
Could we get Mr. Pierce?
Mrs. Dix has had her hand up for some time, Mayor.
Ms. Dix, would you mind coming up, please, to the mic?
And again, the discussion is not, are we going to have this election or not?
No.
It's on a date.
Oh, absolutely. That's what it's about. Now, you could ask yourself, too, is there going to be more people coming? Jane, you mentioned a contested, highly contested vote there on the primary, and I think so. And there'll be a lot of people coming in. And you could ask yourself, is that a good time to have those people just walk a few of the feet over and vote while they're there?
But it's a highly contested vote in one party, not in both parties.
Have it stand alone.
Well, I don't know. I think that there are individuals who are putting some effort into this issue, and if they are already working toward June the 10th, election day, we need to...
I just have, as I said, a standalone election to me is not an election with another election.
Okay. Right,
I don't see it.
You may have some information.
Go ahead, Ms. Dix.
Ann Dix, 314 Jehoshaphat Drive, Aiken, South Carolina. I guess the question I have, and I may need to talk to Stuart about this, with that separate table over there, will the workers at the polls be allowed to say, have you voted for this? Or is it going to be enough publicity so a person, when they walk in, they know, I've got to go here to vote, and then after I do there, I've got to go over here to vote?
Well, I think there'd certainly be signs there. Whether the poll workers and one can mention to the other, Richard Pierce maybe can answer that for us.
That's a good question.
Ask solicitor.
Mayor, I'm just trying to be a well-behaved child tonight and not...
You've been very good so far.
Not answer questions I'm not asking, not speak unless I'm spoken to. If I can help clarify, when we originally passed the ordinance, we passed it so that, as we've done in the past with items we've had to submit to the Department of Justice, like the redistricting, you passed an ordinance that said that the special election would be held within 60 days after DOJ approval. It now appears that, according to Jim Holly, who's helping us with the submission to DOJ, we're really expecting to get approval from Washington by May 20th, which would mean, under the ordinance terms, we would have to hold it within 60 days of that, which would have put it in the summertime. During the course of the DOJ review, DOJ asked for a specific proposed date for the actual vote. And that's when we got into consultation with Stuart Beanball and talked about the fact that there were the primaries on June 10th. That's why that date came up. Since there is no city council election or any city issue that's being voted on, they were comfortable with the separate table because the only city issue that would be voted on was that special question about how the elections would be held. Of course, council can set any date. It would just take a resubmission then to DOJ, which will probably take an additional 60 days to review the change of date, and because they have that right under federal law. Let's see, there was one other point that I wanted to address, too.
The separate table?
We do have a separate table for...
And how do people know that that's where they go to?
I'm sorry, thank you. Yeah, right, that was your question, of course. I was confident in my discussion with Mr. Beanball that would be plainly marked and would be advertised, because we are advertising that, so it would be marked at the polling place. So people would know. Because it does take a separate table, as Councilmember Smith was saying, to actually register and then get a ballot and then vote on the question. Do you want partisan or nonpartisan?
Richard, I was under the impression initially that the process was that we would go to the Justice Department and tell them that we approved, the council approved a vote on nonpartisan, whether it be partisan or nonpartisan. and that the Department of Justice would come back and approve it. And after we got their approval, we then had within 60 days to have an election. And now the process is getting discombobulated. It's changing in the sense that we now have to tell them we want to have this election and we want to give them a date before they're giving us the approval.
That was their request, Mr. DeWalt.
Well, is it their rules that they're breaking, or is it them breaking their rules? You and I have discussed rules all day today. But
I guess the only way I know how to answer that is that DOJ wanted a proposed date. And when we reviewed it, the June 10th primary was being held. We said, well, now we were sensitive to the fact that it was to be standalone. But as far as everything we looked at, having the separate table, and I'm sorry, we can't have it in November because that would make it part of the general election and the statute specifically prohibits that. But since it was a standalone table, there were no pending city council or mayoral elections, that satisfied the Elections Commission that that date could be used.
But in fact, from what I understand, and it's what I recall, we did not approve a definitive date ourselves.
It is true. The ordinance that you actually passed said within 60 days of DOJ approval.
Yeah.
And the reason the June 10 date worked is that it was within 60 days of what we anticipated the approval.
Well, let me just say, we mentioned a June 10th date was mentioned.
We did talk about it.
And the Department of Justice, in their phone call to me, indicated that we gave them the date of June 10th to conduct this election.
That is correct.
So
Richard gave them the date. Is that correct? You gave them the date of June the 10th.
After we discussed it at council.
Right. We discussed it and then said we wanted to
it. It was in the discussion, but not part of the ordinance.
That's correct.
It was not part of the ordinance. That is correct. That was subsequent information that we gave to DOJ. As part of their initial 60-day review, they can send questions back, and that was the question they sent back. When do you want to hold the election? What is a date the election could be held? And that's what we gave.
Do you have a sense, Richard, of why the law stipulates it should be a standalone election and what that really means?
I really haven't done extensive research of that. I just, again, contacted the folks that had the vested interest. DOJ wanted a date. We checked with the Election Commission about would that be permissible to hold it that day, and we got a green light all the way on that, and that's why we went with the date.
My confusion from the get-go has been if we do it on the same day that we're having a county, a state, and a federal primary, I just can't see how doing it with another table can be construed as standalone.
Can I answer that question? Because
sure.
I asked the same question with the Justice Department. They want to make sure that this is a fair and impartial election.
Absolutely.
And to do that, that's why they indicated a standalone election. If we're describing the standalone at a separate table, if someone has an issue, then that will be an issue later on. But the whole issue is to ensure that it is fair and impartial.
But does the Justice Department know that we're having a county, state, and federal primary election?
They are aware of that.
In some precincts, but not all of the city.
No.
It would seem.
Then say the other part of that is if for some reason it goes the wrong way for one group or another, the nonpartisan thing, they've got a perfect ground, in my view, under the state law as it exists, to come back and register a complaint. And I think you referred to that very thing.
Dick, what do you mean if it goes in the wrong way? What does that mean?
What if there's one group who says they don't want to go nonpartisan, and they say, look, this was unfair, you held this, it was supposed to be
this,
a standalone
this
election.
Is an election for all eligible voting members of the city of Aiken. It'll be advertised as such.
Right.
Now, everybody has an opportunity to decide whether they want to come up there and start with to vote or not.
Why do we think we are in a position, one way or the other, to say whether it's going the wrong way or the right way?
He meant either way, for goodness sakes.
I meant either way. Election. It's open.
Which,
my goodness. It's an open election.
I know. That's what he said. I mean, the point is, we want this to be, I just don't understand why it says it has to be standalone if it can be with other elections. I mean, what's the point?
The definition by the authorities is saying this qualifies as standalone. We could stay here the rest of the night.
Well, fine.
And argue
let's
our
vote.
Opinions
let's
and give
it.
Our opinion. But the man that supposedly knows the regulations, Richard has talked to them, and they say it's a standalone. I don't care one way or the other. If you want to change it, fine. But I'm saying, why change it? We've got all these things in process. They're absentee ballots.
Whatever.
More people are going to be up here for the primary anyway, so you're going to get more votes.
Well, let me just say that I think we could document our support with how we advertise and let the public know that this is an election that's taking place. So the whole advertisement and how we go about letting the public know about this is key in this whole election here.
I would be much more comforted knowing that the Justice Department knows what's happening in Aiken on June 10th and know what their view.
We did send that information up, sir. Yes.
Well, I hesitated when you asked the question in terms of the last statement you mentioned with, in some areas, there are people voting and may not be voting. Is that what you said at the very end? And I am not sure. I'm not absolutely sure, positive, that they know that last clause. I do know that they know that the election is...
And I think that's somewhat important because there are primaries affecting some precincts and not others.
That's correct.
That is correct.
Most of the county people aren't opposed.
Let me make this statement here. There's the perception and then there's the reality. The reality is that the Justice Department and Stewart, the Election Commission, says they don't really see a whole lot of problem on June 10th. The perception could be, though, that because there are going to be some precincts out there that are not going to be going to the primary, and therefore they need to know that they still need to go for this standalone election, there are obviously going to be a lot more people from certain precincts going with their interest in the election versus other people have to know they've got to go just for this one thing alone. Mm-hmm. If you want to satisfy the perception and the reality of a standalone election, then it's not going to hurt to pick another day. But the Justice Department and talking to them, Stewart and talking to him, they both feel June 10th's okay. But it's up to council. To me, so many things that we do in government that we talk to staff about, it's not just the reality of what we're observing, but it's the perception of how do people really feel about what we're doing that we have to be more careful about than anything else. So that's the reason I brought it here, so that you could have this discussion and determine, do you want it on June 10th? Financially, we would save a couple thousand dollars probably by doing it on June 10th. But we do have in the budget the finances, because when we talked about this back in February and March, I was figuring it's going to be a strictly standalone, no other elections involved. And so the finances are put in there for the city, assuming we'd pick up the entire cost, which is around $4,500 is what I told you that night. Mm-hmm. So you shouldn't really think about it as a financial thing if that's the case.
I think it would behoove us to make sure that we have an election, if this passes, that is purely fair and impartial, and that no one has something to hang on saying that these things that Dick has indicated. And to do that, you probably need to look at another date for this election.
Okay, would you like to make a motion?
No.
What was the last thing you said? We probably need to
pick another date.
Pick another date.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
And Mr. Mayor, that really would need to be part of the motion so that we have something to send to the.
Yeah.
Well,
May
20. The point was that it was going to be 60 days after we got the approval. We still don't have the approval.
No. And typically, if we change the day, and everything Roger says, fine, we can do all this. We can change it. I'm not here saying we can't change it, but we just need a date. Because typically what the Justice Department do, their deadline was May 20th. When we change the date, then they have every right to ask for an additional 60 days. So, I mean, that could potentially put us into September, October time frame.
Yeah.
We just need a date.
We could defer this thing to early 09 and let the county, state, and federal do the politics this year, and we'll do it the first part of next year. There's no hurry to have it, just that we need to have it by itself.
Well, the problem that we have, though, Mr. DeWar, is that you have passed an ordinance that says we'll hold it within 60 days of DOJ approval. So if we don't give them another day, we potentially would get that May 20th approval from them, and then you've got that ordinance.
We've already started the process.
Right.
So we don't know when they're going to approve it, but we have to do it within 60 days of the date. We don't know.
Well, we have discussed this with them and told them that we're going to go ahead and have this vote, that if you all decide on a different date, and what I was going to suggest to you, if you want to change the date, you change it to either the 9th or the 16th of September. That's a Tuesday. It's a week after Labor Day. Everybody's back in town. It should be a standalone. The only reason I say give me two dates is that way we can check with Stewart, we can check with others, make sure that that is okay, that there's nothing else going on, perchance.
And then
we'll go back to DOGA before the 20th, when we're anticipating them sending us this notice, and let them know council's approved this, and they would like instead, because of these reasons, to do it in September, we'll say either the 9th or the 16th to them.
Ann, could you go to the mic for just a minute? Let me ask you a couple of questions. I know that you are opposed to changing from partisan to nonpartisan, and I don't know if you have done any work in the community promoting the June 10th date. If you could help me with that, I would appreciate it.
I am like Jane. I did not know it was going to be June the 10th.
Oh, okay. Because we did discuss it. But we discussed it at a meeting.
I wasn't there because I heard some. A question I was going to ask was answered, so I was not at the meeting because the question I was going to ask was about the Justice Department, but someone told me that mm-hmm. that was in a meeting that I was not present at. But so therefore, I was not aware of that, so I mm-hmm. could, well, I mean, we still have time to do that.
Right.
But I agree with Roger about perception. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's a standalone, if it's there, everybody knows, and it may not be, but then you get the reality and the perception agree at that point mm-hmm. because it's by itself.
Mm-hmm. So do you have a feel for what would be a good time within 60 days past March the 20th?
So May 20th.
May 20th.
Oh, I like Roger's dates.
What are your dates, Roger?
I said 9th or the 16th. What'll happen is once we go to the Justice Department, let's say you choose the date, we'll go to the Justice Department, we'll let them know. They'll have 60 days to think about this again. So probably in sometime July they'll get back to us. But we'll already have a date set up that we could give them.
And there'll be a lot more time for everyone to do whatever it is they want to do.
And we'll have something in the newsletter, let's say it's the 1st of September, saying mm-hmm. there's going to be this process. And
I'd be happy to make a motion.
Please do.
Mr. Mayor, I hereby move that we change the nonpartisan election date from the June 10th primary to either September the 9th or the 16th of September.
Okay. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. All right. Any other discussion? Any more discussion?
I think we have somebody who wants to say something.
And it will help us with DOJ. As part of the motion, can staff just have the authority to use the date that's most convenient for the election commission between the two?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Either or.
With staff having the ability to select which one is best for the election commission.
Okay, very good. So we got a motion and a second. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. All opposed?
I am an abstention.
Okay. All right. Passes 6-1 there. All right. Good. Moving right along now. Item 4 is setting the meeting date for downtown issues. Mr. LeDuc.
Yes, sir. Mr. Art Gregory came by at our April 14th meeting and had resurrected the issues of primarily the zero lot line, light and air between the buildings. And he has, since that time, I know, contacted Lusty on numerous occasions, contacted me on numerous occasions, and I've been telling him that you could talk to us, but if we're going to discuss this, we really need to discuss it as a group. The one thing I did want to let you know that if we are concerned about air and light in the lot lines, everything in the downtown area is under the design review board authority. So if somebody wants to build a new building, and let's just take his situation off of Newberry Street, and they wanted to build a new building, they would have to go ahead and go before the design review board with the design of this building. And they will have control as to the setbacks or whatever is needed. So council, as they discuss this, I just want to keep that in mind, that there still is an authority, there still will be a public hearing and a review process for situations on should we have setbacks or not have setbacks. If you start saying you're going to have a setback, then it's going to be required everywhere for residential or for commercial. But it is under the design review board. They do have the ability to go ahead and review the building, not only the design, but setbacks and everything else. Now, council could certainly give them guidance and approve something to the fact that we believe that any time a residential property is going to be built, that they should give due consideration to the joint property, whether it be residential, commercial, air, light, and other things. I mean, but again, I just want to let you know that, because people keep saying, well, it's a done deal. The design review board is there as your protection and your advocate.
And it's really the reason we adopted a downtown overlay district, is it not?
That's correct.
To deal with something, to me, exactly like this, where it might apply to one lot rationally, but it might not really apply to another lot.
But now, if you still want to discuss this with Art Gregory or others, we could do that. And I've gotten a couple of dates here for you. It's just that when he was here, you all had indicated, well, maybe we need to talk about some more.
I've heard from most of the residents that live in the area where Art resides, and they are interested in sharing their feeling with council. A lot of it deals with safety and ensuring that there is a way for a fire truck to get in between properties. Based on the way where the proximity of their property is and the lot line of the other property. We have two members that are members of our church that are leaving to go out of town and will not return until the first of the year, that spoke with me in church on fallen services on Sunday, very concerned. They come here for a certain portion of the year and then go back to their home base, their other base, the second half of the year. But nevertheless, all they want to do is share their feelings with council, and they're not comfortable unless there is some sort of ordinance. Whether we do something in the ordinance with our design review board to protect their properties, and I think just listening to them will not do us harm in hearing their concerns.
Okay, what date? What date do you want?
16.
The only date I can meet here is the 12th.
I can't do it.
June 12th is a Thursday. June 16th is a off Monday. And, of course, the 17th is a off Tuesday. Or there might be another date that you all have in mind that you'd want to meet.
Is this the only subject that we're considering it's standalone, in other words.
This is a standalone subject. We're not going to have any other subjects there.
Not at another
table.
Not yet, anyway.
We wanted to do it before, as a pre...
I mean, we could do it as a pre-council meeting.
Right.
Last time we met with Jane Page Thompson on this, we talked about it for over 2 hours.
No, this is not...
5 minutes.
Well, I think these neighbors have asked Leslie if they may speak with city council, and certainly they can.
I don't think it's going to be long and drawn out. I think they pretty much know exactly what to share, what's in their hearts and minds.
I've talked to three of them, actually, and they said very much what you said, but they were very glad about the overlay district. So there, you know, I am too.
So what I'll go ahead and schedule as a work session before the meeting of the 9th.
Yeah.
And again, we're going to be coming back to you on parking situation, off-street parking. That you did ask us to come back, and we got some data on that. And I'll see if we can get something prepared for the 9th also on that we could discuss.
Good.
So we'll start at 6:30 on the 9th.
Okay. Wait, just a minute. We're going to talk about both these subjects on that work session?
Well, if we're going to talk about downtown issues,
6:30
minutes is not near enough.
No, let's do an hour.
About these two issues.
We need at least an hour.
You need at least an hour.
I'd rather do that than have a separate meeting, wouldn't you?
Well, that's fine with me, yeah.
Because I can't make the dates either.
We'll decide what we'll have on the 9th, though, but we'll talk about at least the air and light and setback issue.
Mm-hmm. So June 9th,
June 9th,
we'll do it. Okay, very good. We had an item, though. Don had a nomination for committee.
Yes, sir, Mr. Mayor. I would like to recommend the appointment of Susan Victor to the Accommodations Tax Committee.
Okay. All right. And we have the write-up. You gave us a copy, or Sarah did. Thank you, sir. Let me mention one thing that Sarah's given each of us, worksheet for the Municipal Association annual meeting. And, Sarah, you need this by when? By the end of the day on the 20th? Okay. And that's in order so we can get reservations in, you know. It's always a rush to get reservations.
Reservations this year are non-refundable, so we really need to know what you're going to do.
Okay. And if council agrees, we need an executive session.
Mr. Mayor.
Talk. Yes.
Is there any way I could discuss one other issue?
Well, sure.
I know it's not on the agenda, but and please excuse me for that.
Okay.
But I got a letter.
You got a letter?
Yes.
From
the city. And it talks about rental property and business licenses.
Oh, yeah. I got one, too.
You did?
Oh, yeah.
Except I don't have any rental properties.
Oh, well, I didn't send it, so don't.
And I know that Mr. Hightower was here, and I know he wants to talk about this.
Okay.
And if you would give him just a minute, he can explain to you what his concern is. And I have taken care of my business with the proper person. And
well,
I didn't call Roger about it. I just called the person that sent it to me.
Well, maybe it was, maybe Anita can just quickly explain. Maybe it was information to all council members or whatever.
No. It was not.
Well, no, it's actually already... Beverly and I were both cornered at an event regarding this rental.
Yeah, I was too.
So I would like for you to tell me what your situation is. It might be similar to mine, but if you've not already taken care of it, I've taken care of mine.
I'm not taking care of
mine. Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Go ahead. Take a minute, Willa. Take a minute.
No. Thank you very much. Mayor and council and city manager, I just came tonight just to raise an issue that sort of blindsided me, and I'm glad to see council is in a perception mode tonight. You want to manage perception. When the ordinance passed having to do with listing rental property, I came away with the impression that there was no fee involved in this, making this list and making it available. I thought that's the way it was. Well, I got a whole lot of love letters from City Council, and it says, here's the form, fill it out. One of the first lines says, I need your business license. Well, what does a business license cost? $60. I said, well, I thought this thing was free. Now, if this thing is free, why is it that I have to have a business license to put a number down here? If it's free, I mean, I think that means free. Well, he says, I got to have a six. I called city manager, talked city manager. At that time, my blood pressure was very high, and I probably wasn't very kind as I should have been. But, you know, if you tell me something is free, I expect for it to be free. Free, period. I don't have to pay a dime. Now, I was told, and I got a copy of that letter that said that here's an ordinance that's been on the books for a long time, and it says if you own two or more rental properties, you have to have a business license. Well, it hadn't been enforced. Why are you enforcing it now? It must have been a bad law to start with because you're not enforcing it then. Apparently I hadn't heard anybody. Nobody's dead. So my question is, why do you decide to enforce it this time? And why do you attach it on to something you've told me it was free? That's my question.
Well, Mr. Hodge, I want you to stay there because we're probably going to have to ask you a question again. My impression was that we wanted the names of owners of rental property because when we have problems, we don't know the owner half the time, which is probably one of the reasons that the business license. Now, with you, I can't imagine that people didn't know that you own property, but there are people who own property that we did not identify. Frankly, the business license excise tax, I am on record for years as hating that tax across the board, but I pay it. I don't like it, but I pay it. Don pays it. In July, the worst month of the year, for goodness sakes. And so I can see your frustration at having to pay that tax. I hate paying that tax. I think what we meant was free, though. I mean, I didn't even know rental properties had to have a business license, excise tax number, whatever. I thought what was free is you didn't have to pay to register, because I think there was some discussion of paying to register, wasn't there? Like a license or something?
It was earlier, yes.
Let me ask you another question, and I don't mean to get off the subject. I had a question from people in the county. In fact, I had to fill out a form for the county recently that looked like another business license form. I went to a store downtown the other day, and she was all hot and bothered because she had to fill out this form for the county. Do you know what that is?
I have no idea. We do not have a business license required.
I didn't think so. I thought, I'm going to get to pay two now since I'm so crazy about it, you know.
Anyway. Well, anyway, this just doesn't rest with Councilman Hightower, but others have a concern, too. The fact that they're paying taxes, and now they're having to get a business license. They don't mind registering. If the objective is to see who owns the property, they will register their property. And we're talking about perception. The perception is not good with the reasons why we're trying to do this. So I would think I'm not sure how much revenue we're trying to generate with the $60, but it's not worth, I don't think, the image that we're projecting here in terms of this being another ulterior motive in terms of why we're doing the registration of the property.
But so I think there was a gentleman present when this discussion came up that indicated to me that he owns property and that he has had his license because he owns more than two pieces of property, and that it was on the books for a while. So somebody is paying it. It's just that I think if some people got missed years ago, and it's because we started to do the rental registration, then other people were caught up into this. It might be that if you could just check for me, so the next time I'm approaching this.
Let me answer the question. Mr. Hightower and I had a great conversation.
Come to Jesus meeting about
It comes down to a definition of, you know, who pays and who doesn't pay. When you have a complex, let's say at Gatewood, which got maybe 60 units, or Fairfield, or Colony South, and it's owned by a company, and they're generating revenue from that business of running apartments. And then we have another gentleman who I believe has like 300 units in the city. Now they're all single-family homes that he rents. What is the difference between the one versus the other? Now, when we checked across the state, some cities charge it whether you own one unit, some it's two units, some it's three. You know, and you could set a number of what you think is to have it. But if you said that no apartments, any rental of apartment is not going to go, or unit, any rental is not going to have to pay a fee, then do you do that also on Churchill Commons or other types of units that are in complexes? And where do you stop or start? Or how do you want to handle it? George Zachman, who has 800 homes or more in Aiken County, but about 300 in the city, you know, is one of them that's been paying for a number of years. And so do other ones. So it's, as I try to explain, this has been on the books for a long time. Obviously, we're finding some people that have not paid it in the past. And we set two or more units is the number we have for paying it. Why two or more units? But, I mean, we could sit here and talk about that. You know, why not one? We could certainly make it one, but we're also looking at the fact that if somebody had that apartment garage or just renting out a room in their house. And the way we looked at it was the reason the letter was generated, and it did bring up a lot of questions. Anybody that was paying 6% or on a piece of property, that's when we go generate this list of names. We found a number of people were listed paying 6% on property that was not commercial or not rental. And we actually reduced some down to 4%, you know, through the county, which was good. But then we also discovered in some instances where people had not been paying the fee, and we said they need to start paying the fee.
It's $60 on the first what?
For every unit.
Oh, for every unit, not on the first $1,000 or something like that.
So if you have an apartment complex that has 50 units, then it would be 50 times 60. Or $3,000.
Geez, I don't understand that one at all. I mean, that's like a trucking business, and you have to.
Unless Anita, can you explain any better?
Boy,
that's just what I was told. I
don't think that fee. I believe it's $60 on the first $2,000 of rental. Is that what you were referring to?
Yeah, I think that's what it is. Yeah, it's just sick. I have to pay $60 to put that number on that form, and I can list all my properties on that one form.
Oh, is it $60 for all your properties?
Yeah.
No. No, I don't think
that's not the way I understood it.
First year only.
No.
No, individually?
It's wrong.
Is it individual property?
Every year.
I have to do it every year, yes.
Doesn't he have unit. He has the same rate we do.
I have to do that every year. I have to pay $60 for my business license.
But I
think I heard it a little differently from what you're saying, Willa, from another person who pays.
Anita, would you come up here, please, so we can hear you a little bit better?
It's based on how much rent you're collecting.
Yep. It has
more
nothing
than
to do
how many units
with
you
your
have.
Expenses. Nothing. It's just gross income. It's terrible. It's terrible.
It is based on your gross income, mm-hmm. but the first year, there is just the base fee that you would pay.
Right.
That's what we do for our business. Then thereafter, it is based on the amount of your gross income.
Okay. And Anita, the base fee is $60 on the total units or each unit?
To my knowledge, it's $60 is the base fee, and then you would take your gross income and calculate a percentage of that
thereafter.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're in the county, it's $120. Is that not right?
If you're located, if your units are in the county, you would not pay.
Oh.
This is just for in-city.
Yeah.
So if all your
rules... But I own the units in the city. I don't pay double just because I live outside the city.
If they live outside the city, but they have units inside the city.
How much is the business license fee for me if I live on the bypass, University Parkway, and I have units in the city for rent? How much is my license fee if my address is outside the city?
It's going to be in city rates.
Okay, that's what I'm asking.
And that's $60 for all of the units and out?
No. That's your base fee.
It's your base fee.
And then there's a percentage. You know, anything over the $2,000 in rental income, you would pay 20 cents on every $1,000. I don't have the rent.
But your income is not income per unit. It's total income.
It's total income.
You have to take your tax return in.
Yes.
It's gross, total
gross income.
Gross income.
Yeah.
Your receipts from your
for the business.
If you're in the business to rent homes, that's your business. It doesn't matter how many units you have. Two or more, we have a business license fee that we collect on.
Well, frankly, as somebody that's been paying, Mr. Hightower, I mean, our business has been paying this for years, and I've been squawking about it every year, as Anita knows. I mean, frankly, I wanted some help, you know, and I think this is why. It's on your gross income from these apartments, or your gross income from anything you do, and then it varies according to what category you happen to fall in. I don't know what category you're in. Remember, we have like, what, seven categories? Something like that.
Seven or eight, yeah.
I think we have eight now.
I'm glad when I talked to you, I didn't know it was a percentage of all the gross income.
Now we know what it's going to be.
It told me $60.
No, I talked with someone on staff when I got the letter, because I had already had a conversation with someone about this, and so I tried to get all the information I could, and it sounded to me like it was more than just the $60. Maybe that was the first year, and then after you collect, you bring in your collections, and then they use, I think it was 20 cents or something like that per something,
per
and then
thousand.
Per thousand, and that's what you pay.
And we have talked with many residents where they had a 6% assessment, and we have asked them to contact the county, and I think we have received probably 30 to 40 changes in taxes because of this. So we, in doing this, we have helped people.
Yeah, that was the benefit for me, but
and the county
it didn't
will
help
go
you,
back
Mr.
3 years if your assessment is at 6%, and it should be 4%.
Just a quick question. Am I hearing that we have different categories of business, so one business is going to pay more than another?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Depends on the category.
Why do we do that?
It's all done by the federal government. These different categories that they have set up. In other words, if it's a big wholesale place like a Walmart,
I know the classification
sells codes. Millions of dollars, their fees they pay per thousand are less than somebody else.
Kind of like we talk about water. What do you pay more?
Yeah, but businesses in the city ought to be equal.
Well,
to bring that up.
I will tell you this, and we all know that, have been on council for a while. When we went through all this discussion, we're still one of the lowest of I don't know how many towns and cities we were compared with, but it was many. And so even though we've got this sales tax, this license, we're still very low.
Low in terms of business tax?
Yes.
Except for the cities that don't have it.
Correct.
Yeah, but most of the cities that are prospering and growing nice
and
cities
doesn't have it.
Are the ones that have
Edgefield
it.
Limited all the tax.
The lowest.
Yes, sir. Yeah, come up.
Mm.
dealer is too happy.
So, Anita, let me just ask you while the gentleman's coming up. If it's $60 base, and let's say they receive $10,000 of rental income, and it's 20 cents per thousand, so it'd be 20 cents times 10 or another $2?
$60 is for the first 2,000, I believe.
Okay, then it'd be...
So you would take off the 2,000 off the 10,000.
So it'd be 8,000 or 8 times 20 cents or another $1.60.
If that's the rate, and with 8 categories, I can't tell you.
Okay.
I think that's what Lex told me, was it was 20 cents.
Yes, sir.
I just got one little problem.
Would you give us your name, please, and your address? And
My name is Larry Tyler. I live on Crawford Road.
Thank you, Larry.
But the only problem I got is you have more than one business, right? And plus, we do a lot of business in the city. So you say something about you want to see somebody income tax?
Excellent.
Now, I really don't think that's... Ma'am?
It's an excise. Isn't that what we said?
No, you said income tax.
Yeah, we need to see the income tax.
We need to see your income tax return.
Exactly.
You're right.
Exactly.
Right.
Just off that one business.
Off of whatever you have to pay excise tax on.
I really don't think that's quite right to me now, because I don't want to show people my income tax, you know, because I have different business, you know.
I know. I agree.
And I really don't think it's right, you know, because I got property in the city, too, that I have to pay tax. I mean, I'm paying taxes already 6%, and then turn around, I got to pay $60 per thousand or whatever, you know. I really don't think that's quite right either.
I wish you had been here about 3 years ago.
Yes, ma'am.
I really do.
I've been around.
I know that, but when we were, you know, we were having this discussion. No, you didn't. I mean, it was. It's complicated.
Right. Because it looked like the more you make, the more people require. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm paying left and right, and, you know, and every time you look, it's always something else.
You just try to keep your head above water.
That's life.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. I agree.
That's right. That's like pouring water from a drowning man. You know, you just keep getting more to it.
Yeah. But water?
Pouring water on a drowning man.
Thank you.
But it's, you know, is it fair for you to pay it? You said you're already paying it. And not somebody else not pay it. You know, there you go. Yes, I do. Absolutely.
Sounds like a problem.
Well, I don't think any of us like taxes, but that's kind of the way it is. Our taxes are still low among prospering cities.
Good evening.
Good evening, sir.
Willie Blocker. And Mr. Mayor, I just believe I was supposed to be here to hear some of the things I heard. Members of City Council. I'm concerned. I'm a concerned minister, as a matter of fact. Some people have been asked to try to help yourself. And it seems to me, this is just my opinion, that we're adding additional burdens to the people who already have enough problems. Money is not everything. Surely, this thing with this rental property taxes, it's rough. I think there has to be a way to receive revenue from it, but this thing, what I'm seeing, it seems to be overbearing. You just about seem like you're asking them to sell what they have just to keep from paying the taxes on it. But now, that's just my opinion. Mr. Mayor, I wish the council would reconsider this thing on rental property taxes. If you will, I would appreciate it. And you may be blessed by it. Thanks.
Thank you, Willie. Well, we can certainly do reconsider the whole tax system if you want to. All it takes us doing is getting together and talking about it and deciding what we're going to give up. I don't think we're doing anything that some other cities are not doing, and when we do it, we're lower than most all cities doing it. But, you know, we'll give up something. If by giving up something, you're gonna not do some things that we want to do, and it's always good, I think, to look over what you're doing and see what we need to be doing. Sure.
And I think there are some cities that are doing this, especially the coastal cities, like Hilton Head and the...
That are not doing it or are doing it?
They are doing it.
That are doing it?
Yeah, they are doing it. Yeah. They are putting this tax on because
I think
people own a property there and they rent it out. And so now you have to, you know, fess up with that. But the problem is, in that situation, is that the people are being taxed without representation. Because the people don't live in those units because they're renting them out. But the tax is being passed and they have no say-so about the people who are doing the passing. So it's taxation without representation. And the reason why we have it on two rather than one, because the room would be full. Because now you have representation. But, you know, if you put this kind of tax on the citizen, it is completely unfair, and I'm not going to give you my income tax. Now, if you tell me I got to give you my Schedule E on that property, I'll do that. But I'm not going to give you my income tax.
You can't do that.
If that's what I got to do.
Yeah. Mr. Mayor, I think it's important to realize that we started this with a noble goal of simply trying to find out who owned a rental unit so that if we needed to contact the owner, we could. And it's obviously exposed an issue where some people that should have paid taxes haven't. But the purpose was not to... I never sensed that the purpose was to create a way to get taxes from people. It was to an honest system of trying to find out who lived in a rental unit so that we could contact the owner because there are units that we don't know who lives in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we started this
thing.
That's
exactly right. That's exactly right.
But in all fairness, if you have a business, you have to pay.
But I was assured when I objected to taking my tax return into the city office that I was told that that's the way it was and that everybody was doing it. And if we had people paying the 6% rate, why didn't we know that? I mean, why has it taken this long?
I don't know. Perhaps Anita can tell us a little bit about this. When did this start, Anita? Do you remember? When did this tax start? It's been in existence for a long time.
The business license for two or more units, that's been as far back as I've been here, I think, in the business license.
Yeah, it's been for years.
Richard Pierce, do you recall when we were reviewing the ordinance, how far back that went?
Yeah, and I guess another question would be, how do people know that they should be paying it?
The county sends out on the 4% versus 6%, they send out a letter in June to the property owners saying, we have you at 6%, and if this is a mistake, please contact our office. And they've told us that we just got a little ahead of them when we sent out our letter, and we started receiving the phone calls.
Yeah. But this seems to be a surprise, I think, Willa, a surprise to you, and you've had rental units probably for a number of years.
35 years.
35 years.
We have to know that there is a business, and when it's a person that does not have a property front that we will see on a daily basis, we don't know that you're in business. If you're operating from your home, it is difficult for us to find it.
Is there any way we try to get that information out? I don't know that this is on our website or internet or whatever. I'm not sure it is. I don't know for sure whether it's
if
there.
If someone would call in and inquire, we would tell them that they needed a business
license. It's not,
but it's
publicized.
Not anything that we would advertise on the website unless you direct us to do that.
Maybe we should start doing that for sure.
But do we not have someone on staff that whose job it is to look for businesses that haven't registered with the city?
Yes, we do.
What's the difference here?
Well, it's difficult to find them. I mean, this just came up, and I worked on the program for 2 or 3 months to pull these owners from our taxes. It wasn't just, you know, something that you could very easily find. And
but if you looked at the 6% rate, you would know it was a rental property.
Or it could be commercial.
Commercial. That's how we got on the list, is we had a commercial property. We have been paying it for well over 20 years. I mean, count your blessings. I mean, seriously. And it's well over that. I don't remember exactly when it started. It didn't start in 1974 in our business. It started a little bit later. But ever since then, whenever that was. So that's a long time.
Okay, where are we here? I just want to assure the gentleman in the green shirt, and I forgot your name.
It's Larry.
There. Larry. You have a business on that property? I mean, you're renting that property, or you just own that property in the city at
6%? I'm renting, yes, ma'am.
So you are renting?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Are you a single?
Is it just one property?
Single?
I've been renting property in the city for quite some time.
Right, but is that the only piece of property that you have?
Yeah, I have.
He's not saying.
It's called trust.
Don't tell.
I only know your first name, so. If it's one piece of property, you would not have to have a business license. But if that one piece of property had two or more rental units, you would have to have a business license. But if it's a single family home, you would not have to have a business license. It's for two or more units. No, we were 20 cents. 20 cents.
So he paid that on 46% tax already.
It just doesn't feel right to me to be
good. Okay.
I thought you were talking about your medical practice.
Okay, excuse me. We've got a lot of conversations going here. We need to kind of focus in on one at a time, if we can.
Okay. I keep hearing if it is units. Okay, define a unit.
One. You could have a building and it could be broken into four units. Now, if it is, you would have to have
business license.
Yes.
Okay, but
if it's a single unit.
If I have five, but they're all single units, then that does not classify as a business. That's what I'm trying to.
You have five buildings or five units within one building.
Five individual single dwellings.
You would need a business license.
Okay.
More than you ever wanted to know.
You can add it to that business license. Yes, you can, but you would be taxed at the higher rate. But they may all be in the same class.
But still, I still don't think it's right for me to bring my income tax. I put my CPA in.
Well, it helps to make everybody honest. And it okay. Well, you may be honest, but the person behind you is not. And so it's fair to you in the long run. You need to bring your income tax return. We do not remember any of the numbers. We take a look, we do our calculations, and we see so many of them.
We shred them.
Well, we look, and you can take them back. We can get the information, and then you go on and take it with you.
Okay.
Executive session?
Okay. Glad we resolved all this. Council, we need to go into an executive session if council agrees.
Second.
Do we have a motion and a second?
Yes.
The purpose is to talk about potential contractual matter. So we have a motion and a second?
Eugene.
All in favor? Okay. All right.
And yet,
did everybody...
I had a comment, but I didn't know I had to.